You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
You are listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show, the only metal podcast that isn't totally insufferable. I am Joe Thrash I'd Kill. With me, I've got my good buddy, 365 Days of Horror, or as we're going to call him from the rest of the show, Jordan.
I think we have to call me Jordan now because we have a special guest on the show. And when I say special guest, I actually mean a friend of mine for 20 plus years, 25 years.
Yeah.
Jeez, we've known each other too long. Since Hebrew school, want to get specific.
Let's not bury the lead here, though. Our special guest is very much involved in the metal scene, has played on records that you know and you like. We got Ron Verrode here. Is that
Verrode?
Verrode.
Verrode on the road. That's going to be like my Henry Rollins getting the van.
Nice.
It's going to be Verrode on the road.
And how do you pronounce your middle name again?
Zvi.
Got it. I apologize. You got a complicated name for a dumbass Texan.
Yeah. There's no Israelis down there?
Very few, to be honest with you. I don't know what the deal with that is. It seems like there weren't a ton of Jewish settlements in Texas.
Okay.
We mostly have Germans and Mexicans, and their music intertwines to be the same thing.
And what's that?
Colloquially, we call it Tejano, which is, the umpapa beat with horns and accordion.
Oh, whoa, really?
Yeah. It's the two really intermingled quite a bit in the 1800s. So you have, let's not talk about.
All right. You can send me a link later, but that's pretty interesting.
I was in a band in high school with a guy who played, it was a kind of a Czech community that I grew up in, so he played in a polka band that was very successful, and then he played in a Tejano band that was also very successful, and he played the exact same beat for both bands.
That's sick. Wow. That's really interesting. Okay, cool.
See, Ron's into all sorts of different types of music, so I think you just sparked the new solo project for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a tough market to break into unless you have unless you've got quinceañeras going on in at your local VFW.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do, man, you've never seen a circle pit as big as a quinceañera, because half of the event is just people walking around the gymnasium in a big circle.
Well, if you've ever been to an Orthodox or Hasidic, Jewish, wedding, the hora is a 45 minute, could be up to 45 minute, circle pit.
That's awesome. I'm going to my first Jewish wedding next month, actually. So I'm looking forward to that. So all I know is that they play the Hava Nagila, right?
Yeah, but it's, one wedding I went to, it was Hava Nagila. It's always, always kind of polka beat kind of thing. But one wedding I went to, there was just a little interlude, and it was Eric Clapton, Layla for a little bit, but over but just that's pretty good.
That's sick. And I know the breaking of the glass, to close the official joining couples, right?
Absolutely. But
I'm afraid that my knowledge of Jewish culture I get solely from Jordan.
Okay.
So I've just been lying to you for years.
Wait, you don't all have really tails?
Well, the traditional ending of the Jewish wedding is where we find the non-Jew and point and cluck at him. No, I mean, you'll have a good time. There's some good traditions, and all you have to do is stand up when everyone else stands up, sit down when other people sit down, and then you have some good dinner, some brisket or something.
Yeah. With the bride and groom up in the chair and et cetera, et cetera.
Sweet. So I'll report back with my findings and let everybody know the horrific moment when they all pointed and clucked.
They steal your goyish blood to make matzah.
It's fucking brutal.
Okay, so you guys met in Hebrew school, right?
Hebrew school or middle school, something like that.
Elementary Hebrew school, yeah, that time. And we really didn't become friends, I think, like friends until high school through a mutual. And I think it was just kind of, we both liked a lot of the same bands or just kind of getting into heavier music, and then just started hanging out on our own and just kind of laughing at all the dumb things that we laugh about on the show.
Jordan was actually at the first Zvi show.
When was that?
That was like 2004, I think, at the Brighton Bar in Long Branch, New Jersey. And the bill was, it was me, I opened up, and then Cleric played, you know, like they're on a, you know, they do all that like John Zorn stuff. Mm-hmm. And now, but you know, they used to play at the Brighton Bar with me. So, and this band Severance that was like, you know, local, like aggressive butt rock.
I was going to say 2004 in New Jersey. Did you all have flat ironed hair and white belts?
We had friends that day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All of our friends were in like screamo bands that would like play Battle of the Bands to play Warp Tour and like festivals like that. So I didn't even have my own band. I was like doing like the set that I used to do was a lot of like covers and just ambient stuff with loops. And then like I even played with one of our friends like screamo bands once opening up, and they were like, "What is he doing? LOL, this isn't real music." So it took a long time for me to kind of find like-minded musicians in New York, because all the people I grew up with just wanted to sound like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it. They wanted to sound like Taking Back Sunday or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. I mean, those were the heavyweights from that region, right?
Yeah. Like, I think everybody that I know that me and Jordan grew up with, except for us, just had a, just like love when Saves the Day comes on, mm-hmm, at a bar, they'd sing along and I have no idea what the fuck it is.
Heavy pop punk and like emo core vibes during that time. And we're just like, you know, Mike Patton's pretty cool. I think we're just going to listen to this instead.
I think I was still probably worshiping Mike Patton. And that parlayed into me getting into like, you know, all the stuff on Tzadik, you know, the Zorn label. And that's how I got into the band that I play in now, like into Kaodot, because of my Mike Patton obsession, like indirectly.
We really buried the lead on this again. We're terrible at this, but you've been an active member of Kaodot for a number of years now. How did you get involved?
It's been like about like 9 or 10 years that I've been playing in the band consistently. But the first time I played in Kaodot, it was like 2007 or 8. Maybe 2009, maybe 2007. I like subbed on a gig. Everyone kind of in the lineup that they did for their second record. It was like a shitty tour where it was like really hard and everyone was young and angry. So most of the band quit. But Toby still wanted to do this one-off gig at Tonic, this John Zorn like new rock festival. So that's the first time I played with them. So we did a couple of rehearsals and played one show, and then I like didn't play with them, but you know, became friends with them. Didn't play with them again for another like 4 or 5 years, and then I like went on my first tour, and then have been playing with the band since. Like so 2010, I think.
Gotcha. I imagine that it was kind of a hard road for a band like Kaodot to find the success that they have now, with being such complicated music, I guess, is the way that I would put it.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah. It's like totally insane. And it's each record's like insane in a totally different way. But man, good thing it's out there, because nobody else is doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it has a purpose rather than just like pandering to like what people are into at the moment. So I think it's important.
Yeah, I think the first record that I heard was Coyote, which is an insanely complicated record, but I also hadn't think I had ever heard anything like it when I put that on.
I don't think there is anything else. That's a really unique one. That was actually the first tour I did. I played keys mostly synth doing the violin parts, because the violinist, she was kind of on the way out at that point. She moved to California and like just had a different life there. So I came in and I played her violin stuff on synth for like all of the songs off that record. And the second half of the set, we did like the metal songs or the rock songs or whatever. And I played guitar.
That's all. So you're a multi-instrumentalist. What would you say is your primary instrument?
Guitar.
Yeah.
Keys, like, I'm not a great piano player. I only practice or write stuff when I need to, and stuff that, you know, like a real pianist could probably play with one hand, I have to use all 10 fingers. Because I'm, yeah, I took piano lessons when I was younger. And when I like taught guitar lessons, I took like piano lessons again from like a co-teacher, but I never stuck with it. It's hard to, you know, have all the chops on all the instruments. That takes a, I don't know, that I know a lot of musicians that do that, but that's not me.
Yeah, no, I'm just always impressed because I can only play one instrument, and even then extremely poorly. So seeing bands that like, okay, well, I'm just going to switch out and play this one now. I'm like, damn, that's a flex.
Yeah. It's a lot, man. I mean, I can play guitar and bass, but that's, you know, that's not really as drastic.
The bass isn't a real instrument. Let's just get that out there.
Yeah. Well, it's bass guitar. It was made, I think, by Fender, so that they didn't have to hire an upright bass player or carry one like an upright bass. So it's just for guitar players. But there's, you know, different technique and stuff like that that's specific to bass players. But like, in Psalm Zero, the band I play bass in, I just play with a pick the whole time.
You do also play drums for a band. We shouldn't ignore this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, so right now, I'm in New Jersey right now. I crashed here last night because we haven't played in like 10 years. I don't know. Jordan, did you ever see St. Frantic?
I did. I had one of your like two shows, I believe you played in a pool hall.
Oh, you were at that.
Yeah.
The Q and Brew. Yeah, that was our first like official live outing. So I have this Metallica cover duo with me and my friend Steve. He plays in that band, The Black Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Is
that Greg Piciotto or something?
Yeah, Greg, who used to be in Dillinger. So I've known Steve forever. He made my old band, So Is the Tongue's first record. He like produced it with us. And we have like a bunch of joke bands, and one of them is St. Frantic, taken from two of the song titles from the St. Anger album, St. Anger and Frantic. And we started that band when we had a band that never like recorded anything, and everyone would just show up late, and Steve would play like shitty Metallica riffs like Saint Anger and stuff, and I would just jump on the drum set and we would cover bad Metallica until everybody showed up.
Incredible. I love the choice of choosing like the worst Metallica songs.
Yeah. And last night's set, we didn't even do any of the Saint Anger stuff. We just focused on Load Reload.
Yes.
And the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack.
Yes.
There was a MySpace page, and unfortunately, like, all the music from MySpace is gone. But you did record like two songs, and even in the recording, you just start laughing.
Yeah, I just start laughing. Like, I do like a really bad impression of I hope Steve has them, but because it's gone from MySpace. But I do like a shitty impression of Hetfield that sounds like South Park.
I gotta ask, because it's come up a number of times on this show for reasons that I cannot discern, but have you ever done the Metallica song from the Biker Boys soundtrack with Ja Rule?
Oh, we did it again?
Yeah.
No. Maybe if we had like somebody to do Ja Rule's part. I'm already not a great drummer, because like yesterday we rehearsed before we played the show, and that was the first time I probably played drums for more than 5 minutes in like 10 years. So that's already hard enough. And then belting it like Hetfield, I can't imagine doing like rhythmically complex shit like Ja Rule's parts. So if we had a guest vocalist, like maybe. Man, that song's bad. But we would do it. Yeah.
It's so jarring the way that it's constructed or pieced together, I guess.
It's all bad, man. Like, Have you tried listening to like Load or Reload the whole way through?
Not since they were new records.
It's bad. Load is 79 minutes, I think. And Reload is 76 minutes.
Unnecessary.
You just totally unnecessary. So many ideas to get out, you know?
Yeah, they were like, no, this is, you know, all these songs. Like, we're not cutting any of them. And we had, and Reload was just like the extra songs. Or I don't know if they had, I forget if they had like the concept the whole time. And they're like, no, this is like our fucking Pink Floyd The Wall. But we're just going to release it like a year apart. I don't know. Whoever was telling them that that was a good idea, I mean, I thank them for it, because otherwise I wouldn't have played the show I played last night. It's you know, it's a good topic of conversation.
My working theory with a band like Metallica is once you've reached this level of success and acclaim, you no longer think you have bad ideas, so you just put it all out there.
It's fucking terrible. Like, have you listened to the Hardwire?
No, I listened to the Spit the Bone or whatever, and I was like, I don't care enough to listen to the rest of this.
I'm a glutton for punishment, and a long drive around the time that that record came out, I like forced myself to listen the whole thing, and it's like a double disc. It's like over 80 minutes. I think it's fucking garbage.
Yeah, like how long was Kill 'Em All? Like 30 minutes?
Yeah, well, I think that that was, it came out on a vinyl, and I think that was like a, for a lot of bands, it was a good way to kind of pace records. Like, once the people didn't just do collections of songs, they were like, all right, we have 40 minutes, let's pace it so that there's like side A and then this thing starts side B. And even in the digital age, those records like still sound good and are, have a good flow. But then the CD age, everyone's just like, well, we have all this room, let's put 80 minutes of music, and like most of it is like really bad and there's a lot of filler. And they could have benefited from, from having the limits of only having like 40 minutes or 42 minutes on a record.
But yeah, there's no, and you can do anything you want. Nobody's going to tell you no. As a matter of fact,
oh, nobody tells Metallica what to do.
You'll have Bob Rock call you up and say, hey, we got Ja Rule in the studio.
Who was, no, that was like, I don't have the DVD anymore. I recently watched Some Kind of Monster on Netflix, but I think that was like their manager's idea. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to, cause you know, St. Anger was just like a bunch of shitty jam sessions that they edited together, and they edited something like, oh, and we'll get like a rapper. And I think Lars wanted DMX, and their manager was like, no, we're getting Ja Rule.
Yeah. We'll get the poor man's DMX.
Yeah. The poor man's DMX, or like Ja Rule was like probably a little bit more relevant at that specific time. So they got Ja Rule, and it's, yeah, I'm glad it happened.
The rest is history.
That's how we got Fyre Festival.
Yeah. And then Ja Rule, he, oh my God.
He's innocent.
Yeah. He's the man. I love him.
So you're also in Psalm Zero and in Sabbath Assembly. How'd you both get into those bands?
Ooh, Psalm Zero, they had some personnel changes. yeah, I'll just say that. And Charlie, so Keith was already playing live drums for them, but only did one show. And after they kicked out Andrew, Charlie writes, I think, he wrote basically all the music. I think Andrew wrote like a couple of riffs here and there, but it was basically Charlie's thing. So Charlie was like, I'm going to just play guitar, and asked me if I would play bass because I could also do the yelling stuff. So that's how that happened. And then, yeah. And we just actually did a record. That was the last time I saw Jordan, cause we did it at Machines with Magnets. Yeah. And that's how I joined that band. Sabbath Assembly, I started playing with them. Kevin emailed me because they had a show, the Martyr Doom Festival at St. Vitus, and they made the record with Kevin doing like 20, you know, guitar overdubs. And they did one tour with a viola player doing the second guitar stuff, but she couldn't make it to that gig. So Kevin asked me, and I thought it was just going to be a live thing, but then I've done like two records with them so far. So very busy, a lot of music that I can't really keep in my brain. Every time I have to play a show, I have to relearn everything because it's all really complex.
We've been doing this show too long because we've had both Charlie from Psalm Zero on it, and as well as members of
Sound Assembly. As
Jamie. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
So, like, for just an average music fan that might just go out to see Psalm Zero or Sabbath Assembly, maybe like a young guitarist or something that wants to join some of these bands, is it all just reaching out to these bands and getting in touch with, like, and marketing yourself and just really meeting these people? Is that, like, the best way to kind of get into a band like that?
Oh, to, like, well, because of KODOT, I joined kind of that circle of musicians. So it's like getting involved with any scene. At some point almost joined East of the Wall from New Jersey. I like jammed with them, but at the time I didn't want to be in a bunch of different bands, and now I am. But it's just like who you know. There wasn't like an American Idol audition process or anything like that. It's just like, well, this guy, he can learn music and we know him and we can hang out with him. It's all who you know. And it was never the intention. Like, I joined KODOT because, you know, I was a fan of theirs for a long time. And, you know, my old band opened up for them. Then I got to know them through that. But, you know, it wasn't the intention. I just wanted to open up for KODOT. And then I, like, played one show with them. Then I joined them. And then
I was at that show, too.
Yeah. And then after that, the first KODOT show that Sows the Tongue played.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how I, like, first met them. And then eventually I joined that band. And then I think, like, yeah, then I joined Sabbath Assembly. I think Charlie, you know, I knew Charlie. And he was at a Sabbath Assembly show. And he was like, oh, Ron can do different stuff, probably. I don't know. And that probably kept that in the back of his head when he needed a new guy. And I think Keith, Keith was in KODOT too, and Keith recommended me. And he's like, yeah, Ron plays bass. And I've always been, like, a big fan of, like, Extra Life. So I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, I would love to do that. The same way that I used to go to every single Dysrhythmia show in the tri-state area. So I'm just a fanboy. So I don't know, maybe you could do that. You can just punish your way into being in bands that you're into.
it sounds like a great solution here is just harass Toby Driver until he lets you in the band.
No, everybody leave him alone. Like,
that's a joke. Like, that's a joke.
Yeah. Just leave. Like, people in bands are normal people. Don't harass them. They like, a lot of them also have to go to work too when they're not on tour. Just treat them like normal people.
So that's a question that I like to ask of the guests that we have on the show. Are you a full-time musician or do you have jobs on the side?
I have a gig. Yeah, I have gigs on the side. I used to teach guitar full-time. But then that did, like, as I started doing touring stuff more, that started to not work as much because the guitar student, like, they want the same teacher, you know, year round. And if I'm away for like a month, that's huge. So that started to not work out as much. So right now I do like random, like, corporate AV and events stuff, because that's freelance work that I could pick up and leave, the same way that a lot of people kind of just do, like, service industry, bartending, etc. This is what I've found that is a good companion to touring. Because I can come and go as I please, for the most part.
Yeah. So, with your guitar teachings, can you make me sound like Yngwie Malmsteen?
No. See, like, guitar lessons are something I kind of fell into as well. And I've never been, like, a shredder, but I know what it takes. You know, I know, you know, you sit with the metronome, you practice the sweep picking. I could sweep enough to, like, kind of trick somebody, but I'm not like a shred guitar player. My expertise is more like, you know, like leaning against the amp and like making it feedback.
Or at least pressing the right pedal.
Yeah. Using that's more fun for me. That's more what I like to do, but I could do other stuff. I read, you know, guitar, you know, I could read for guitar. Okay. Reading for guitar sucks. I could read probably better for like synth and clarinet or something like that. But you know, I taught when I was like living in New Jersey, teaching at a local music shop. Most kids just want to learn Green Day riffs, mm-hmm. and that's valuable. Like that, you know, getting psyched on something or whatever the fuck people are into. Like when I started teaching, the American Idiot album had just came out. So I think I've taught every single song off that record, and that's cool. That like gets you into it. It's simple enough, and then you trick them into learning how to like solo and learning theory and stuff like that. But there was one student that I had that at some point he became way better at shredding and all that stuff. So I passed him off to another teacher.
Because I guess there's been such a long amount of time since American Idiot came out. Now, what kind of guitar based music are kids into? Like, is there anything?
Nothing. I don't think there's anything. I can't like, what's that band from Ohio? I can't think of them. But I don't know their songs. I just know that people like it.
All I can think about is like the same modern rock bands that have been kicking for like 20 years now, like Shinedown and shit.
No, I don't think people are really into that. What's the
Imagine Dragons?
People like Imagine Dragons, and that's kind of a rock band, right?
I don't know what any of their riffs sound like, though.
I know Radioactive. That's all.
Yeah, that's all I know too. And I couldn't hum a riff for you there.
Yeah. Guitar based music, at least like in pop culture, isn't that big anymore. But that's fine. I think kids still like guitar. You know, they sell Led Zeppelin and Nirvana shirts at like at Bob stores. So I think rock is at least cool. Maybe just vintage rock. I don't know.
Yeah. Wait, what's a Bob store? Cool.
Yeah, like Bob's. It's like a Marshalls or just like a. You know,
it's
like
a department store in the Northeast.
In the Northeast. Yeah. Sorry, you're in Texas.
it's like a Woolworth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, guitar music. It's just like the thing is. I read this article recently that the Strokes kind of ruined just rock music in general, whether you like them or not.
I don't know anything about this, but based on surface level alone, I totally agree.
and I think that, you know, they have cool tunes. I was never really into them, but that's like kind of where rock music stopped progressing. And it just like, at least for pop music, because there's been like a lot of cool, you know, rock music in the 90s and 2000s and stuff like that, but early 2000s, I guess, early 2000s when they came out, it's like that's when it's like, well, this is rock music and you have to do it this way.
Yeah, the same kind of cadre of bands came out at the same time, which was playing mostly retro styled rock. You had the Strokes and the White Stripes that had very much those 70s-ish style to them. And it's I guess the last band that really made a big impact, and because I see them like they're headlining stadiums, is like the Black Keys.
That's the band I was thinking of. I think that band, they're from Ohio, I think.
And even right? Then, I don't think they attract – yeah, they're from Ohio. I don't think they attract the kids. I think it's mostly like beer dads.
Yeah, it's like dads, yeah. So I think I kind of agree with that at least for most people, it's like that kind of solidified. It's like, well, if you don't do rock music the way that they used to do it, then it's not valid.
and then, now we have Greta Van Fleet. So it goes back to that.
Exactly. Okay. That's the same exact thing. It's just like the only cool popular rock band, and they still kind of have like a slight classic rock tinge, is like Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah.
And that's fucking awesome that they're a band that puts out new records that fills up stadiums. So that's cool. But that's the only one. I think that's the only like big rock band that is kind of progressive in a way that people like.
Yeah. It's pretty slim pickings out there, I reckon.
But if you don't, you know, there's the internet now, and younger kids now, they just like everything. And everything's accessible if they want it. And younger kids, you know, I used to be as well, you know, they're hungry to check out new music. So I think, I don't know, maybe it'll change once the beer dads stop going to shows. you said beer dads or beard?
I guess it goes either way. It's the same dad.
Yeah, so maybe at some point when they stop going to shows, like new interesting music that involves guitar will maybe become popular again. I don't know.
The day that Dave Grohl retires.
Yeah, as much as I kind of respect him, yeah, just retire, man. You're done. Just like, I don't know, but he's not the worst as far as like making rock music just like dated.
It's more
Greta Van Fleet. Yeah.
He's just the avatar that I hang all of my anger around the stagnation of the genre on. He's not really responsible per se.
It's like he's the Guy Fieri of rock music now, where he kind of gets a lot of scorn and hatred, even though he hasn't done anything wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Poor Guy Fieri.
I think people are coming around on him again and realizing that, you know, maybe they don't want to hang out with him, but he's okay.
I have to relay this story every time he comes up. But Christian Molinar, I stayed with him in San Diego once, and he told me that he taught Guy Fieri's kids dance, and that every time that they had a recital or something, Guy would cook up a big bunch of food and bring it and, like, be super supportive and sweet to everybody, take pictures of everybody, you know. Seems like a good guy. He just looks like shit.
Yeah, that's a good parallel between him and Dave Grohl. Yeah.
So we brought you on here to talk about your solo album that just came out a few weeks ago through Nefarious Industries. It's Dear Pink, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we could talk about that instead of new metal.
For now, we'll go back to what we really want to talk about.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, I gave it a listen, and I dig it, man. It, kind of in the same vein as KO Dot, and there's a lot of sounds on here that are really beyond easy categorization. It's kind of like dream poppy in a way, but also incredibly complex. I don't know exactly what to make of it, but I know that I dig it a lot. How would you describe it?
Oh, awesome! Thanks. That album is like 100% like, it's not like he wrote everything, but a lot of the stuff that happened on that record was influenced by like working with Randall Dunn, the producer. The way that we worked on that, Randall was moving from Seattle to New York, so he was more local, and I had like some ideas for songs. And I was like, hey Randall, I want to do a record with you now that you're here. But I don't have anything like fully written. He usually doesn't do this. I was like, are you open to like, we do a session and I take stuff home, work on it, you know? So, you know, going back and forth with him. So we did like the initial sessions for the record, did all like the basic tracks, just guitars and most of the synths for all the songs. And we tracked that in like 2 days. And then Randall's like, you should program drums. Or like asked me first, like, do you know anybody that programs drums? I was like, yeah, but I don't want to rely on anybody. He's like, you go for it. And then we didn't get together again for like another 6 months. And I went home, programmed a bunch of drums, tried to think of like what I wanted to do. For a while, I was like thinking, I was like, oh, maybe I should make it, you know, like hyper detailed, complex stuff like Aphex Twin, but I'm not that at that level yet because it was my first time doing it. And I just started listening to a lot of like the 90s, like kind of like trip hop stuff that I used to really love, like Portishead, Massive Attack, and like got back into like cheesy 90s movie soundtracks, like the Spawn soundtrack and Hell yeah. Lost Highway.
There's that connection with Jordan again.
yeah, the Spawn soundtrack and like the Lost Highway soundtrack. And I just started getting back into all this other stuff that I never, like, do you remember this band Faithless? God is the DJ. I was like listening to that a lot. So just like trying to just experiment with that. Cause I've never, done drum programming and I love it. It's awesome. You can do so many cool things with drum machines that you can't do with live drums, like adding delay and all this other weird stuff.
What drum machine were you using?
GarageBand.
Oh, interesting.
yeah. It was the plan the whole time. He's like, well, what do you have? I was like, I could do it on GarageBand. But then we ran
all the garage band stuff through like analog gear and rack stuff to warm it up and make it not sound like a SoundCloud demo. But, you know, and he added like, you know, like plate reverbs, spring reverbs and stuff like that. But yeah, so like I did that and went back to Randall, did another weekend session where he's like, oh, now that it sounds like that, you should do this kind of synth and this, you know, I wrote the parts, talked about what kind of sound he wanted. You know, he set me up with sounds. That's like kind of his specialty. Setting me up with weird synth and guitar sounds and stuff like that. Yeah, so that's kind of like how we worked on that record. You know, the intention was for me to make the trip hop record that I always wanted to make, but never knew how to. But it's probably way weirder than I think it is, because my concept of weird music is totally different because I play in insane bands. So to me, like it's funny that you said dream pop, because to me, I'm like, yeah, this is like my pop, you know, singer songwriter record, but. Then there's like weird long ambient things that are weird to just make it simple. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to play some of your music at the end of the show. Is there a track that you think stands out that you got to make people hear before they hear anything else?
Well, I would probably make them listen. If I was going to show somebody something, it would probably be like the least offensive. Because if you just, you know, you show them like this weird thing and they're like, what is this? What is this intro? Which I don't think of things like this, you know, people lose their attention. I understand that. I do that too. Like I check out music and if within the first couple of minutes it doesn't interest me, sometimes I'll turn it off too. So I would probably put the track Dear Pink. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the title track, but it's spelled differently because I like making things complicated. So it's probably that song because it's like the closest. I think it's the closest thing that I've ever released that's like that's kind of like a pop song, but it's not.
You boys, because
the chorus only happens one and a half times.
You boys with your avant-garde leanings, just trying to make four on the floor music the kids can dance to.
I'm getting there, you know. At some point, I'll probably do something that's a little bit more palatable. I've been fooling around with like a nylon string acoustic and writing some stuff on that. But then I like record demos. But then I add something else weird on top of it. I'm like, oh fuck, you know. Like I thought I was going to make a singer songwriter thing. Mm-hmm. But no, then I add like weird synth arpeggiators and shit like that. So maybe one day I'll write something normal.
It's the old quote about the Butthole Surfers that I remember. It's like, why does Gibby put so many effects on everything? It's like, well, why does a dog lick itself? Because he can.
Yeah, it's more fun to throw in different textures and stuff like that. Like, I know, you know, you could just, like, there are ways to get specific sounds, but that's not interesting to me. Mm-hmm. To just be like, oh, let's make like a metal record and then we're going to chug a lot on the low E string and stuff. Like I could do that.
And here's where your breakdown and your clean chorus goes.
Yeah. The singing chorus and stuff like that. And there's a lot of music that I like that has those elements. But for me, it's just not as interesting to do that. Like, yeah, like I thought I was going to make a 90s trip hop record, but it's like that would have been really. I could probably figure out a way to rip off Portishead like down to the T, but like that's boring for me.
So I know you recently did the metal live thing for touring with Mercury. Is that something like you're gonna ever go back to, or are you just done with that for a long time?
It was just like a gig. It's, you know, stuff like that. The way that came up was, like visa stuff. She had a European band and it's expensive to get a visa to come to this country. So it's like to save a couple bucks, got together an American band. But I don't know if she has any American touring. There was going to be like a tour that just didn't come through. You know, it's not the kind of music that I'm really into. It was just like a gig and, you know, something I tried. It was valuable. It was weird. I've never done something that was like that. Just like a pro gig with somebody I didn't know. You know, like all the, even though like KO.Toby writes the music, Psalm Zero, it's like Charlie's songs and stuff like that. I'm still like in the band. The Miracle thing, it was just like, learn the songs, put on the costume.
Don't look at me.
No. You know, we hung out. You know, you spend like a month with somebody, you get to know them a little bit. But like, yeah, I don't know. I probably don't want to do that again, unless if it's something that eventually makes me a full living. But it was just like, you know, a bunch of random tours here. There, it was cool. Like, because of that, because I was already over in Europe for when we did the Mjerker Epica tour. then like I was already over there and I played at Roadburn and hung out in Roadburn for the whole weekend. So it was cool. There was like some cool stuff about it, but you know, it's not music I'm passionate about. So we'll see.
What were the crowds like for Epica and Mjerker show?
All the Mjerker stuff we did was just like opening slots. So it changed on depending on who, we were opening up for, like Solstafir. It seems like that band, it's like they're like the sad boy Euro metal band because they play all like the Euro metal festivals. So it was like people, like definitely people with like black metal shirts and stuff like that. But this is like the sensitive band that they like.
We have feelings.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we're, yeah. Then we, the Decibel tour was, you know, more people with black metal shirts and stuff like that. But the Epica crowd was great. I loved it. It kind of almost felt like it was like I was at a comic book convention every night.
People were dressed up.
No. Well, maybe. All right. So it didn't have like the cosplay element, but everybody, it was like kids and just like old guys and stuff like that. And everyone was there. Like nobody was trying to look spooky or serious. It's like, so like the black metal thing, it's like, everyone's like, I'm evil, even though like, I'm just like a nerd that works in IT. Like that's like, you know, that kind of metal identity is like, I'm evil and scary and stuff like that. And check out how many goats and upside down crosses I have on my vest and stuff like that. But Epica is just like everyone was smiling, having a good time. I loved watching them every night. I've never really listened to them before, but it was like watching Metalocalypse or Death Clock, like fronted by Ariel from Little Mermaid. And if, you know, and if that's your thing, which it was, I didn't think it was my thing, but then there was, you know, like pyro and shit like that. All the lights were like synced up to the backing tracks and stuff like that, and to the drum solos. It was, man, quality entertainment.
So on the Epica and Solstafir tour, there was another like interaction that you had, right?
Oh yeah, on the Mjerker tour, the first one I did, we were in Oslo, and Necro Butcher from Mayhem showed up because he's new Mjerker, new Solstafir and stuff like that. And I was like, I don't really give a shit about that music, but I knew who he was. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. It was like short little old man. And man, like that guy sucks.
I've heard that he sucks.
Yeah.
What's,
yeah.
Is there a specific suck?
Well, you know, I was walking around before the show and there was like, there's these like phallic statues near a river or something like that, or like near a bridge somewhere near the venue, just, you know, going for a walk, checking out Oslo. And, you know, I was telling him about it. We took a walk then. This was like, oh, did you see the phallic statues? I was like, oh yeah. He's like, yeah. Oslo has a phallus problem because there's a lot of homosexuals in parliament, I think he said. And it's like, and I don't like it because I pay taxes. And it's like, Jesus fucking Christ.
No spires in this town, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing that he said that was, you know, he didn't read, you know, he didn't give a shit about like reading the temperature of the room. Like he was talking about like U.S. metal festivals. He was like, Yeah, they used to be, you know, they're not as good as they used to be. It was, you know, things got a little Jewy. And I was just, I was like, I was about.
You didn't crack him in the head.
I wanted to. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, oh, of course. It's the fucking guy from Man. Of course he's a fucking racist. So, just, I mean, it wouldn't have ended well for any of us. You know, there was like three more shows on the tour or something like that. It could have been weird. But now I just know. And yeah, fuck that band. Nobody should book them. Nobody should buy their fucking t-shirts. Then go fuck themselves.
Should have pulled out your yarmulke, put it on.
Yeah, I should have just started speaking to him in Hebrew. But yeah, it's like totally fucked up that everyone supports bands like that that are openly racist, anti-Semitic, etc., etc. So
my official stance on this is Mayhem has always sucked.
I mean, I don't listen to that music, so I don't know where they stand like compared to the other bands. I kind of like Emperor is cool, but overall, but
aren't they pieces of shit too? So
are they?
It was
I think so.
It was the Faust from Emperor that killed the guy for being gay.
Oh, cool! Is Eason a piece of shit?
I think I've heard that he's a pretty nice middle-aged man.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, he's the main guy, and I like his music. I like his solo records, but yeah, Mayhem, fuck them. Take their patch off your. Off your denim vest. They're not cool.
Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed.
So before we let you go, I already know the story because I lived part of it, but I want you to tell Joe and our listeners about X Spin Kick X.
I would love to talk about X Spin Kick X. So this is a band. Well, Jordan wasn't really a member of the the band that was on stage, but he was kind of a member of the band. He was the pit boss.
Oh, gotta have one of those.
Yeah. So I had this before I did this really overly serious avant-garde whatever the hell I do, my main thing was kind of joke bands like Saint Frantic. So the first one that I was in was called X Spin Kick X. The idea of the band was just like, we were going to, a bunch of people were home from college, you know, for like winter break. And we were going to get together and make a shitty metalcore band and record a demo on a computer mic and upload it to Pure Volume. And like maybe during the summer when everyone was home from school, you know, play like somebody's pool party or something like that. So that was the idea. We just wrote these like terrible songs that had like one riff that were a breakdown. I've never been into like music like that. The closest like thing that I've been into that was kind of hardcore was like Glassjaw, but like that's not like real hardcore. I never owned a Terror CD or a Throwdown CD or anything like that.
Oh yeah, I definitely didn't either.
Yeah, yeah. Good on you. And so we put up our shitty computer mic demo on Pure Volume, and this kid from South Jersey IM'd our guitar player Danny, because that was the contact that he left on the Pure Volume. It was just like his AIM screen names, like,
which if I remember correctly might have been Danny X Kill You.
Danny X Kill You. Yeah. There might have been the word mosh might have been in there. And yeah, it was like, hey, are you in Spin Kick? And he's like, what? And then we got booked for a show at a pool hall in South Jersey, and we rolled with like the whole crew. It was just like
there was multiple cars worth of people.
Yeah, there was like three guitar players in the band for no reason, just playing the same thing. You know, three guitars, bass, drums, and I was the singer, and I didn't say anything. I just yelled, and I like wore like, you know, I wore whatever normal clothes that I would usually wear on a day to day. I didn't have tight pants until like 2010 or something like that. And, but yeah, I borrowed the other Dan in the band, the drummer's, like girl pants. Cause that was like kind of the thing as we were talking about, that was like the scene in New Jersey. So I borrowed his girl pants and like put a handkerchief in my back pocket, wore a Terror shirt, wore a cadet hat, So we played that show, and then we were like, let's try to get on Hellfest when it was in, not Hellfest, France, like Hellfest, Elizabeth, New Jersey, or where was it, IKEA?
Yeah, it was at the Rexplex in New Jersey. This was like the American festival that was all like hardcore and metalcore bands.
Yeah, it was all hardcore and metalcore, like Throwdown played. And we did the Battle of the Bands for that, which was our second and final gig because we told too many people that we had like these fake identities. I was Tyler X Spin Kick. Dan, the drummer, was Jonathan Taylor Thomas X Spin Kick. And it was like pretty obvious, I thought, that it was like a joke band, but people like took it seriously and they like fucking went nuts and stuff.
Well, you should say specifically who went nuts and threatened you.
Oh yeah. And then, so we played the second show and we like sold all these tickets and stuff like that, which is bullshit, and probably made $50 and made them probably a few hundred dollars. And somebody having to do with organizing that Hellfest Battle of Bands knew that we were a joke band and they were upset that we made fun of their quote unquote lifestyle. So we didn't win that, although I think we should have because our crowd response was good and we sold a lot of their stupid tickets.
There's video of the show on YouTube, by the way.
Yeah, it's sick. We were great. That was like the biggest band that I was in for a while, until I joined KODOT. So then we didn't win the Hellfest Battle Bands. We're like, oh, that sucks. What the fuck? Like, we were killing it. And then we had a third show booked. It was like a benefit for somebody. I think somebody had maybe even seen us at that show. And we had a guest book. You remember those? Like on GeoCities sites? And then this guy was like, threatening us that we were, and then the band was canceled because then we got death threats. So you know, it would have been really nice because from the FSU, if you know what that is. Like the guy,
Florida
like,
State University.
That's the thing, is that's what we thought it was when we got like the first thing. We're like, why are these people from Florida State University really angry at us? And then we asked a friend, and we're like, yeah, it's like these fucking guys from Boston, and they beat people up for no reason. So that was pretty scary, so we didn't want to fuck with that. It would have been really fun to play Hellfest and just laugh about it for years, but I feel like we did good work because we made them mad.
Well, there was a specific member of a specific band that threatened you as well.
Oh, fuck yeah. The Banner. That guy, like,
the Banner?
The Banner. I don't know. I don't think anybody gives a shit about that band anymore.
No, I mean, I know who they are. That's the name.
Oh, really?
I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, because they're, I don't know, it's not that great. But the guy from that band, I hope that he finds me on social media now and like, hey man, what the fuck? You're never gonna play a show again in this town, you know? But he like wrote this like long thing on our like MySpace page about how like what we're doing is wrong and stuff like that.
This isn't a costume, it's my culture.
cool dude. it was funny. It was scary for 2 seconds because the guy who threatened us, his name was like Fat Pat or something like that.
That's, you remember definitely, that I don't. That's definitely a Houston rapper.
Okay. Yeah, there was also the guy in FSU that threatened us. And then a couple years later, he killed somebody at some show in Asbury Park.
That's right. Wasn't he wearing a Pantera shirt?
Because he was wearing a Pantera.
Yeah.
With that had a Confederate flag. And he just was like, you know, no conversation, no like, hey man, that's fucked up that you're wearing that. Which, you know, it was just a fucking Pantera shirt. Like, you're at a fucking stupid metal show. You're going to wear a stupid metal shirt and like threaten the guy and killed him. So it's fucked up. Like, that guy like threatened us and we canceled our third show that never happened because of that. And just stopped playing because, you know, it wasn't a real band. The only point of it, yeah, we weren't passionate about the music. So that was funny. You know, I'm glad that I had that experience with music and knew that, yeah, those people are fucking insane and dangerous.
There are people out there and they're lunatics and they take themselves way too seriously.
Yeah, like, how can you take that seriously?
I'm glad I've never had any kind of interaction like that in my life.
Yeah. I'm glad that I had it and I made it out alive. And I hope that, yeah, don't tag the banner in this when you
definitely won't.
I'm not actually scared because, like, what the fuck? I don't know.
Yeah. He'll have to ask off of work from AutoZone to come find you anyway, yeah. So don't worry about it.
What is, like, the FSU going to come to, like, some like avant-garde metal show and try to fuck with me? I don't think so.
All of my bad interactions are with like teenage black metal nerds in European countries that nobody knows about.
Oh, like threatening you because of shit that is
because I make fun of black metal constantly.
I fucking hate black metal. Like I've never been into it. Yeah, I think that's why I liked Epica, touring with Epica as opposed to the other bands when I was playing in the Miracle band, because it was ridiculous and it was funny. And it's like music's supposed to, you know, it could be serious, but it's entertainment at the end of the day.
I always make the same, you know, kind of connection that this at the end of the day is basically a hobby that you're really passionate about. We're basically dealing with stamp collectors or model railroad builders that just threatened to kill you because you made fun of Sweet Lady Black Metal.
Yeah, like, you know, I wasn't really into, like, the Mirker music, but, you know, she had her own thing and people, like, sent her death threats because they didn't like her music. Yep. That's fucking insane.
Yep.
And like really stupid. It's like, yeah, if you don't like it, like I just don't listen to music that I don't like. And I'll like talk shit to my friends sometimes. I don't fucking send people death threats because I don't like their music. That's fucking bonkers. I don't get that.
Lots of strange, obsessive weirdos on the internet I've found.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've buried this for long enough. I know that you two have been raring to talk about this. Please tell me about nu metal.
What do you want to know?
That's the thing. I know that this is a touch point, especially for Jordan. Jordan is a walking encyclopedia of every third-rate nu metal band that ever was signed to a label for 10 seconds.
It's something we grew up with, and we came into music, I think, at the same exact time in the same exact place. And we live 10 minutes from one of the biggest venues in the area, Birch Hill Nightclub, that bands would always hit. Like, you know, now it's just kind of bands go to New York or Boston. And this venue, especially in like the 90s and 2000s, all these nu metal bands would go there and shows were super cheap. It's like $10 to see all these bands that are new and exciting to you when you're 14 years old. So I think that's kind of how it started for us.
Yeah. I was devastated because I couldn't see the Slipknot show that happened there. Like when they first came out, because like, I think they had already probably booked a tour and didn't know that they could fill way bigger venues. Now they're playing fucking arenas, but you know, when Slipknot was something I was interested in, like it was like happening down the street. Slipknot played there. I saw Static X there.
Linkin Park played there for, we used to have a radio station, the 92.3 K-Rock, and they had these low-do shows where tickets were 92 cents, and Linkin Park played there. So it's kind of, it was right there for us all the time. And being a young kid and like, it's either you go to the mall and you're away from your parents or you go to the concert venue and you're with your friends and you can kind of be free for 4 or 5 hours and, you know, slam into each other.
Yeah, like I saw some of the worst fucking bands there just because it was the hang for the night. Like I saw Union Underground. Anytime a show happened there and I wasn't doing anything else, like, hey, you want to just go check out this terrible new... I saw Chevelle there. Yeah, I've been into some pretty bad music that, you know, I could check out once every couple of years for nostalgic purposes, but it's what got me into music, you know? I know a lot of people that are a little bit older than me that have just as embarrassing musical tastes and like shitty like hair metal bands that were like one hit wonders and stuff like that. And I'm sure if they lived near Birch, I'm sure those bands played Birch Hill and maybe they grew up here and then they would go see, I don't know, what's like a fucking
Slick Toxic.
Is that a hair metal band that had like one
Night
song?
Ranger.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as that. Yeah. That like nu metal was my introduction to aggressive music. Like that wasn't Metallica. So that's how I got into it. And
what was your favorite nu metal band back in the day?
Samdust.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't you love how he says it with like conviction and not even hesitating? It's like boom, Samdust.
Yeah. I saw Samdust once opening up for Creed.
that was like a crew. Yeah, like Samdust and Creed. I think they were on the same record label too. Yeah, that was a crew.
Yeah. They would fuck shit up.
Yeah. Samdust, you know, they were a little bit more interesting, especially the second record. They had like electronics. There wasn't really riffs. There was just like a lot of palm muting and then like Lejeune just like belting like soulful singing. So that's kind of like a little bit more interesting than, I don't know, what's like a really bad, like what? Like Primer 55 or something like that. Or yeah, that just probably just sounded like Korn, but, or like Coal Chamber. That's the worst.
Coal Chamber is by far the worst of all of the nu metal bands, bar none.
Yeah. But they're great. I watch like me and friends, we like watch, there's this one video on YouTube, like after they came back together and I think they're playing in Australia.
Is this with the eagle?
Yeah. And they're walking out to the Halloween theme. And for some reason he's holding a bald eagle, but then there's like a eagle trainer person like standing next to him and it doesn't look badass at all. And then they play, Miloko.
He just came in on stage with an eagle for a couple seconds and then gave it to someone else.
Yeah. Like they had to
why? Ride. I don't know.
Yeah, they like rented an eagle or whatever you do to walk out to the Halloween theme at some Australian festival.
Incredible.
God bless them.
Anyway, here's Big Truck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that meme, the anyway, here's Wonderwall. Like, anyway, here's Big Truck.
Oh, we should make that happen.
Anyway, here's Big Truck. You know, there's a niche audience, but I mean, that's what the internet's for, right? You don't have to pander to everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're coming up here on time. Is there anything else that we should touch upon before we close it out and play some music?
Check out my record. You can do it for free on the internet. You could buy, we have CDs of the full length record, from Nefarious Industries. And there's a limited, colored 7-inch of the single Dear Pink, and the B-side is a drony Portishead cover that I recorded at home. It's limited quantities, and all the bands that I'm in have or had, like Sabbath Assembly just came out with a record. KO Dot record comes out in September, but I don't think that's announced yet. And
don't tell anyone.
Yeah. And Psalm Zero record is done, but I don't think there's a release date for it yet. So there's always music. There's always music to check out. I'll probably be playing around. I don't have anything. Actually, don't even have any shows booked right now, which is weird. But I'll be out there doing something at some point.
Coming soon to a road near you, Ron Verode. Listen to the music.
Verode on the road.
And let's go ahead and do this. That we're gonna close this out. We're gonna listen to Dear Pink from the record, Dear Pink.
Different. Rad.
It's different right there.
Yeah. Right.
Thanks so much, Ron, for coming on and yucking it up with us chuckleheads.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.